Enjoy the journey, enjoy the journey, enjoy the journey, enjoy the journey.
All right, so Luke.
Yes.
You're telling your friends, hey, I started a Bigfoot podcast.
Yeah. Like, okay. That's it. All right. My mom. Oh, that's really nice, honey. Okay.
Yeah, you're like, see what I'm saying, though? Bigfoot has a stigma, right?
Sure does.
And it, you know when it got that stigma? You know when it got its name, Luke?
Nate, I don't know when it got its name.
Okay, so 1958, Bigfoot went from being something that fur trappers, locals, natives, you know, prospectors, loggers, those kinds of people, they knew about it. They didn't talk about it. They didn't spend time defending if it existed or not. They just said, hey, if you're going to go over here and you're going to look for gold, watch out for this thing.
Right.
Then in 1958, though, Bigfoot hit the mainstream, and this is how it happened. Bluff Creek, California. Many years earlier, in 1958, a bunch of guys are building a road. They're trying to get this giant road in there. They got all this big gear, and they're trying to open up for the logging industry, right? So they can get some, like, get a lot of stuff in and out of that town. And there's not, you know, the roads are, they're small. So they got all this gear out there, and then they come out in the morning, and they notice there's tracks all over the place, but more importantly, their stuff is scattered all over the place, and they notice that, like, 700-pound tractor tires have been rolled around and picked up, moved. So it's they're not doing CrossFit out there in 1958. You know what I'm saying?
It's crazy. 700 pounds. There's a select few humans on this planet, probably named Thor and Sven, that can actually move a 700-pound tractor tire, and not moved in the way that this article describes it. These guys, these lumberjack, these road building construction crew, they're bewildered. It shook them up pretty good. So much so that 15 crew members quit due to this bizarre spreading of tools, equipment, and essentially the tossing of 700-pound tractor tires on the job site.
Yeah, you show up to work, you see these footprints all over the place, and you kind of go, all right, who did it? You know, there's always a range of people when something like this happens. You know what I mean? Like, you have a tragedy or you have a weird event. There's always the guy that's just, like, super pumped. He's like, dude, oh my gosh, he's freaking out. And then there's the guy in the corner that's, like pooping his pants.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And there's always just a range of emotions. Some people, like, if aliens came down tomorrow, you know, there'd be someone out there, like, you know,
like Randy Quaid in Independence Day. I mean, he's ready for it. He's out there waiting for it to happen.
There's gonna be those guys, and then there's the guys that are literally terrified. It's like, this doesn't happen to me. This doesn't happen in reality. I get up, I go to work, I come home, I have no drama in my life. They can't handle it, so they quit. They just up and quit. And the local newspaper, I think it was from Humboldt County, shows up. They take a photo of the guy who made a plaster cast of the footprint, and they snap this photo, dude, and it's like it went viral.
Right.
Just went out on the media wire, and all these local stations picked up the story, and then boom, Bigfoot overnight was a household name.
Right, the legend is born.
Everyone knew about
right.
it.
Right. This is where it all started. I mean, this is it. This is where you get Bigfoot. This is now why we have a monster truck from the 80s and 90s named Bigfoot. This is where everything started. It became more than whispers and oral tradition and thousands of years of non-scientific documenting.
Yeah.
It was birthed into the 20th and then the 21st century and really into the scientific enlightenment period where we document, where we measure, we weigh, and we record, and we give things Latin names. And this is really where I think Bigfoot crossed out of the pages of history and into really the common era in a way that I think made made people feel comfortable to really come out and talk about their own experiences, right?
Yeah, and I've seen this happen with like bands and music. In my 20s, I toured in a rock band, I sang in a rock band, and I remember being on tour with other bands, and they were just like bands that like some people kind of knew about, and then all of a sudden they had this song, or they got on a major label, or someone else took them on tour. And next thing you know, dude, they were like a household name. They went from like nobody knew, like, you know, a select few people knew about this band to like the world knows about this band. I've seen that happen so many times. And the same thing happened with Bigfoot. As soon as it kind of hit the mainstream, everyone's like, oh, I saw that thing.
Right.
10 years ago, I saw that thing. Where? Well, I was in Oklahoma. I was in Michigan. I mean, you got loggers all over the United States coming out and saying these stories. But before that, Luke, and you hit this in episode one really good. You were talking about how fur trappers, prospectors, loggers, natives, hunters, they had stories of this thing forever. Wild man of the woods. It wasn't Bigfoot yet.
Right.
And what I really want to hit home is there's been several sightings, specifically two guys that got abducted by Bigfoot, literally thrown in their sleeping bag, carried to like a den, and then dumped out, and then literally were there with them for days trying to escape. There's some of these accounts that they describe these creatures in detail. It's not just like, oh, I saw this blurry blob. It's like, no, you could literally draw it.
Right.
That's how much description was given from these guys. I think you and I in this episode are going to paint it like, what does a Bigfoot look like? Let's talk about the physical attributes of these creatures. And we're going to base these on thousands of eyewitness descriptions who all say the same thing. The details don't vary.
Yeah.
And I don't think people realize that.
And I think that leads credence. I mean, obviously all this is circumstantial evidence. If we're laying out a case as if we would in court, I think when you have enough witnesses that say the same thing, it absolutely leads credence to the case you're laying out. What we're going to cover here is those things that remain constants throughout a myriad of different people from different walks, from different years, from different countries that say the same thing. And I think it's worth laying that out as if we would lay out a case saying, here's what we know. And I want to backtrack a little bit. I mean, we're starting out this blurry creatures journey. We're taking, you know, before we jump into the deep end, it begs us to lay a foundation, right? So this is the most recognizable, the most talked about, the most influential crypto that there is, and that's Bigfoot. And while this podcast that Nate and I are putting together is about blurry creatures, we need to start here. And before we jump into all the different rabbit holes and theories and interviews that we're going to do around this subject, we need to start with the basics, because this is like I said, this is a journey. We're taking one step at a time. You got to crawl before you stand. You got to stand before you walk. Got to walk before you run. And if we're going to build a foundation, we need to understand what is known and what is quote common knowledge. What are the givens about Bigfoot?
Great metaphor, because right off the bat, that is the most noticeable thing people say every single time. It was on 2 feet. It was walking. And the scientific term is it was bipedal. And this is something that, like, people, you know, you go into the woods, nothing walks on 2 feet.
Right.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, a bear can stand up, scratch itself. A bear will take a step or two. But, you know, it goes back down. And I think that that's really the part where the fear comes in. And people's like, oh, there's something standing over there looking at me. It's on 2 feet.
Right. Or it's running. Right. And that's the other thing, too, is that bears aren't going to run bipedally. They don't. And I think what's really scary for most of the people that witness this is that the only thing that would be bipedal would be a human. And yet these people know this isn't human. It's maybe humanoid or has characteristics of a human. But
yeah.
When it's not a human, that's what's scary, I think, is that it's something that walks on 2 feet and, man, it's not a person.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's a lot bigger.
And a lot of people who have, say, encounters at night where this creature comes around the house, they often say, I could hear it walking on 2 feet. You can tell. It's like a thump, thump, thump. You know, you can tell like a horse walking with four legs or any other creature with four legs over animal with two legs. It's just obvious. You can tell. I think that's something that's like right out of the gate. Everyone describes it. Bipedal, walks with 2 feet. And I think the next part is like, okay, what kind of foot are we talking about, right? The casts. I don't know if you know this, Luke, but there's a term called the mid-tarsal break. And I've heard many, you know, the nerdy guys talk about this. So a Bigfoot has a flex in the middle. It can like break. It's got like a hinge right in the middle. And you can see this on the casts. When they cast the foot, it's like there's a little ridge in the middle. And the scientists who do recognize this creature will say, yeah, it has like a mid-tarsal break. So when it's walking up hills, dude, it has like a hinge in its foot. So it can go like straight up a mountain. And you would think, like, human beings, our feet don't work like that. Like, you know what I mean? We just have the ball, and it just kind of moves at our ankle, and that's about it. But theirs is like, they got like this traction foot where they can literally probably traverse straight up a mountain. That's advantageous, and you can see that in the casts.
What else has a mid-tarsal break, and we don't?
I don't know. I mean, I don't...
Because that's crazy. I mean, it's like if you can fold your foot, or essentially... That's where you can hinge your foot.
You have a hinge in the middle, so you can like step, and then your foot can bend into the step. Imagine just having a hinge in the middle of your foot. It's basically like your foot is able to flex and move, and that's kind of nerdy. That's next level stuff. I've heard that a lot, but it's like a feature.
That's crazy. I mean, I didn't know that.
They can tell by these casts.
I didn't know that. It seems like there'd be something that'd be really tough to hoax.
Yeah, and it's hard to hoax. And I think that's the thing about the tracks is. They see these in the tracks, right? So the next part is like the tracks show scars, wounds, injuries, lines in the skin, and toe prints. So they have these casts that are like, you can't fake injuries, scars that have healed and healed back. You know what I mean? Like you can't really fake fingerprints. It's, I mean, maybe the technology is getting there now, but they've had these tracks for decades that have these features in them that like, oh, this thing got a major gouge in its foot and it healed. And you can see that in the footprint.
It's not like George Lucas has been running around in the woods since the 50s, you know, making fake footprints.
Even then, you're gonna cut out a foot out of like a piece of wood and walk around with some.
Right.
You can't fake the footprints. And a lot of the scientists who do recognize this say, "Hey, look, we have like proof that this foot is this cast isn't fake."
Well, I'll say one of the things too is that there's a ton of evidence, actual. Striations in the skin that you can pick up that give it a unique toe print, a unique footprint, a unique heel print, things that you
exactly
and you would see if you and I walked barefoot through paint. That's the same kind of evidence that we're seeing people find and document here in the scientific era.
Can you imagine going through like spending months and months and months trying to come up with some gel like foot that could like leave an impression but like fingerprints on these casts? I don't know. I don't even know if it's possible.
Yeah, for a hoax, I don't know who has that kind of want to.
Yeah,
there's probably a terminal time limit, right? Like you're like, dude, okay, this is not really worth it anymore. It's stop being funny. Now it's essentially dominating all my time.
Yeah, it's like next level hoaxing that I don't even know if it's possible. Some of the scientists.
Well,
say it's
I think it's less likely. You know, 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago, way less likely that even when someone would spend the time or even be able to try to hoax that aspect of what was found in the 60s and 70s.
And all over,
right? Yeah.
Someone's got to like send these casts all over the place and organize them and then hope somebody finds them. It's just too impossible. But when they see these tracks though, here's the next part. Bigfoot walk in a straight line. An absolute straight line. They don't walk side by side and their heads don't bob up and down like humans. When humans walk, we kind of bob up and down and we kind of walk left to right and we have a certain amount of distance between our foot tracks.
Yeah.
Bigfoot often, they just kind of have like a straight stride.
Like 1 foot in front of the other?
Yes. So when they see like the Himalayan tracks and they see in the snow tracks, they're literally in a straight line. The way that their knees and their legs work, they walk right in front of each other in a straight line.
Like a sobriety test. Essentially, they walk the line, right?
Yeah, exactly.
On Johnny Cash.
And then sometimes they'll find these tracks in the snow or whatever, right? And you got like a huge length between tracks. So somebody would have to literally hop 2 feet forward, 3 feet forward, land straight, and then keep going all the way down and have it be perfect, right? It's not just a fake footprint. It's literally dozens of footprints in a straight line, a perfect distance from each other. Yeah. You know, it gets real nerdy, but some of these Bigfoot guys, they go to their grave saying this thing exists, and they go through all this evidence, and people still go, oh, you're crazy. Right. It's all a hoax.
Becker can say that, yeah, I mean, this stuff has been hoaxed, but there's an obvious difference, but the obvious difference between what a hoaxer is able to do with a set of wooden shoes, it's pretty obvious based on just the last two things we talked about, the gait, the tracks, and then the foot, the last three things we've talked about, that you can easily disregard a lot of the majority of hoaxes based on the fact that what seems to be the real evidence not only is consistent, but it has a ton of elements that would make it next to impossible to replicate, especially across vast areas, different parts of the country, and maintaining the consistency that we find with things with sticking the evidence bucket.
Especially before the internet. Wouldn't be able to talk to this hoaxer, and then you couldn't corroborate your stories. You couldn't corroborate your fake evidence. It would be really difficult.
100%.
Yeah. There's just these nerdy little things that, like, just even the human head bob as you walk through the woods. Like, if you're in a monkey suit, you're walking through that's just something you can look for. If you're like, oh, I want to actually look into this Bigfoot, I want to go on YouTube and watch some videos. And if you see, like, a monkey suit and a guy's head's bobbing up and down, that's probably a dude in a suit. You know what I mean? It's just easy to tell because it doesn't follow in line with, like, what the true hardcore Bigfoot guys will say about how he walks, how it walks, how they walk. And let's talk about how they run, though. I've heard dozens and dozens of stories of truckers being on the road at night, driving through the middle of the woods, looking out their window, taking a curb, going 45, 55 miles an hour, and they see a Bigfoot keeping pace with their truck, like, outside the window, running alongside of it. Like, I don't know about you, but that would terrify me.
And not only that, but then their ability to jump, you know, and cross, you know, 4-lane highways in 2 steps, or jump across a 2-lane road, you know, in one hop and then disappear.
One bound. Usually, someone will say like a Bigfoot in the headlights, just boom, boom across the road.
You're talking about something that runs twice as fast as Usain Bolt. Like, this is like, it's not somebody in a suit.
And you're a football guy. This is like the ultimate running back.
Well,
right,
I mean, this is like Tyreek Hill times two. I mean, we're talking, that's really, really fast. Again, to back this up, there's multiple sightings people have said and been specific about speeds, distances, and noted these things because I think of how outrageous the experience was, being like, yeah, I was going 45, 50. And this thing, this bipedal thing, was keeping pace. Like, just, it starts to fall outside the realm of being believable. But then you have so many, you know, unconnected experiences.
I think when we talk about Bigfoot, right, our inclination is to think it's got to be related somehow to, it's in the primate family, most people think. And a chimpanzee is like 4 to 5 times stronger than a human being. A chimpanzee. Yeah. Take the strongest human and you take a chimpanzee, it could rip your arms off and beat you with them.
chimps that have become pets, I mean, oftentimes have killed their owners.
Yeah. What's the fastest top speed a man can run?
Man, I think it's got to be 20? Well, I mean,
25.
That'd be tip top. Yeah. I don't think it's much faster than that. I know when we look at the NFL, you know, they did do these speed ratings of in-game stuff, and you've got guys that hit 22 ish, maybe 23 miles an hour at the fastest. You can extrapolate 40 times, but look, it's not sustainable. That's the difference. I really think a lot of this is, like, even the fastest humans in the world, they sustain this for 100 meters, right? You know, it's burst speed. And we're not talking about keeping up with a semi at 45 miles an hour, running stride for stride with a car. When you get into that realm, it's just, it's really, really, really different.
Well, I'm thinking,
than a human.
I'm thinking in my mind, and I've heard this said many times, is that if, you know, they think a Bigfoot could push 20 times, 25 times the strength of a human. If a human can get hit 20, 22 miles an hour, then it's just not out of the realm of possibilities that this creature could run 2-3 times faster right. than that. But I think, yeah, a lot of people driving at night, they see it run across the road, and it's like it just jumps over the road. That's how fast it's going. It's just a skip and a bop and a whoa, what was yeah. that? You know what I mean? It wasn't like, it's like not like a human where it's like just running as hard as it can to get across that road. His little legs are going. It's just like, worry, yeah. it's gone. They, you know, it's basically just like a giant man, like Incredible Hulk. You know what I mean? Kind of thing.
Wild man of the woods, right?
Yeah, yeah. So then we move to the top of the animal. You know, sometimes they're behind trees, and it's just like they're sticking out from both ends of these massive trees. So you'll see someone that's often reported, they call it tree peeking or whatever. They look around trees, they kind of dodge back and forth, and they're sticking out on the other side of it. It's terrifying to see this the bulk and the size of this creature.
I'm interested to see, or I'm always interested to see how people actually gauge size, right? Like, that's a big shoulders. That's a...
I'm sure this is where it gets fuzzy. You're saying this is probably the fuzzy area of how big.
Yeah,
they are.
I mean, I just don't know how you,
because it's somewhere between 6 to 10
right,
feet.
Right,
you know? It could be 9 feet, but they're saying it was 7 feet. It could be 7 feet. They're saying it's 9 feet. You know what I mean?
But I think at the end of the day, big is big, right? Like, so if you're guessing, you just know it's a lot bigger than you are as a human.
Not small. Well, their arms are interesting. They always say they're like really long arms. If you know anything about Hollywood costumes, they usually have like extended arms. If they're going to do like a gorilla, if they do that knuckle walking thing, they'll have like an arm that goes over your arm. Kind of like those Incredible Hulk hands you can put on.
The one you can stuff a beer inside of?
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Yeah.
They have their arms are huge and they're long. And they hang way past their side. And that's one thing that a lot of people break down in the Patterson-Gimlin field. They say, look at how long her arms are. And they describe how long they are, how they sway. Human beings' arms are a lot higher up.
So my question then, Nate, for to you then is how often with long arms like that, my first thought would be, okay, do these things spend time in the trees? As we see with a lot of the species in the ape family, but I don't think I seem to remember a whole lot of sightings of a Bigfoot swinging through the trees. Is that something that happens, or is it pretty much understood that these creatures are mostly on the ground, or if not always on the ground? This is a real question.
No, I mean a lot of people think that they're up in the trees a lot, and especially the juveniles. So the juveniles are up in the trees all the time. And there's actually several videos of juveniles swinging from trees, and they go, what is that?
Yeah.
And like I was even watching the Survivor Man,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
You were watching his stuff. He did a whole series on, I think it was season 6, was all Bigfoot. And he's talking into it, talking about Bigfoot. And literally someone broke down a baby juvenile swinging from one tree to the next in the frame behind him.
Wow.
It was crazy.
Wow.
Like, I was like, dang. And he's out in the deep in the Alaskan forest, right? Just being like, I don't know, Bigfoot's, doing his little monologues.
There's something behind him.
This guy was like, look, you can see it swinging from the tree right behind him. Yeah, they're not stupid. They know they can go way up there and they can hide. They can probably climb a tree in no time. They can probably swing from trees. Why wouldn't they be able to do that? They can, I mean, we're talking superhuman strength.
I'm just starting to think of like a 10-foot, like an 8 to 10-footer, weighing like, 1,200 pounds, like swinging around and not breaking branches.
But I think that might be why juveniles do it a little bit more, because they are
a bit smaller,
less inclined to break trees, tree limbs, fall out of trees. Right. Who knows? A lot of people describe injured Bigfoots. Hunters will say, "Oh, it was injured," and you could tell it was like walking funky, like it got hurt. So I don't know.
Huh.
They probably have the ability to get themselves into trouble too.
Right.
If you're climbing up a tree like that. Since we're on the arm, a lot of people say the hands are just like human hands, but they're just bigger and tougher and snap you in half. But that's what they do. They break trees, big trees. They just snap in half. And a lot of the Bigfoot guys will go out and they'll record and they'll show these trees that they haven't been sawed down. They haven't been snapped in half by things falling on it. They're literally just someone grabs them. We're talking 8 inches in diameter, 10 inches in diameter, and just snapped in half.
Jeez.
And you can see where all the fibers in the tree just snapped. It wasn't cut and it wasn't blown over.
Yeah.
They just show their strength. Kind of like animals do that. You know, they mark their territory, and males in lots of different animal kingdom do that. You know, they show their strength. You know what I mean? They fight it out. I don't know.
It's pretty normal, right? It sounds like animal behavior. You know, in some alpha that's marking, you know, his territory. So big hands, and you kind of touched on the strength there too. We talked a bit about how chimpanzees are four times as strong as man. Bigfoot's strong, maybe 25 times stronger than the fittest man out there. And that's, you talk about people getting grabbed. I don't want to get grabbed.
Yeah,
that's not something.
I poop myself.
Yeah, I think I'd be all right behind you.
This is another thing that's described all the time. They throw things perfectly. You're talking like the best quarterback of all time right now. He can run 65 miles an hour, maybe. He can throw things perfectly. I mean, you're talking like the greatest athlete of all time is Bigfoot.
Right.
It's
really
just a freight train.
Yeah, it's really a wonder that, like, when Harry joined the Henderson's family, they didn't sign him up for football. I mean, totally missed it. Totally missed like a whole side series they could have run with Harry.
But they throw things. They throw things with accuracy. You know how it is. Like, you're skipping rocks or you're throwing rocks. You can't have these giant fat fingers and still throw things.
So they throw things.
But I think it's just weird though if you're like out in the woods and all of a sudden a rock just comes flying right by you and doesn't hit you. They're trying to like scare you.
Yeah, they're trying to buzz you. And then there's like stories about them throwing rocks off roofs of cabins, hunting cabins out in the middle of the woods in Alaska. There's a pretty famous story about a cabin getting pelted.
So
I mean, as long as we're talking about still more attributes, right? One of the things that's very distinctive is that a lot of times you get an odor, right? There's a smell.
Like garbage wrapped in dead flesh, left out in the sun for five weeks. Gosh. Kind of smell.
And I guess people often smell something before they really see something. Why they call it the skunk ape in a lot of places. Rotten flesh.
Yeah, have you ever had like a roadkill like beside your house or something?
It sounds like old Bigfoot needs to work on his hygiene.
Well, this is a primate thing. Like a lot of primates have like a gland in their armpits, and when they get territorial, they release the smell. And so a lot of people will be out in the woods and like, I smell this terrible smell, and then all of a sudden, like 2 seconds later, I look around and there it is.
Yeah.
And I think if you're out in the woods and you smell something that smells like dead flesh all of a sudden, like you better have your head on a swivel, because
I think my assumption would be I was walking up on something dead, right? Like there was like a deer carcass or something that had died in the forest. But if immediately after you're seeing something, it's not a little Bambi laying there on the ground. It's it's hairy.
Terrible smell is reported all the time with sightings. And so I think we're moving up towards the face of this thing, and we could spend a lot of time on the Bigfoot face, but they have this, they say they have that flattened nose, like a big flat nose, and they've got a conical head. Their head kind of goes up into sort of a cone shape, and they got these big eyebrows. And basically look like a man, just more of a cone-shaped head. A lot of hunters say when they have a Bigfoot in their scope and they're ready to shoot, they'll see that face and it'll be looking back on them, and they can't pull the trigger.
It's very human.
Because it's too human.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah.
I mean, that is reported all the time, that hunters have them in their sights, don't shoot. I think that would make you feel weird if you were in that situation.
No, they can't. Like killing a person. I mean, I don't. I think that would give you pause to the human aspect. Would give you pause to pull the trigger. Obviously, man. If it looks like one of us, you know, enough like one of us, it becomes a very giant moral dilemma for most people that aren't psychopaths.
Yeah, most people say, "Oh, a hunter hasn't shot it yet." It's like, well. Because it looks like your 10-foot uncle.
Right, I was saying, it looks like your hairy uncle. Yeah. Very human-like face, like Neanderthal-ish is what I've heard as well.
So, this head, this giant cone head is set down on these shoulders. A lot of people say they kind of, when they look, they kind of move their shoulders like they have a neck brace. And you can see that in the Patterson-Gimlin film. She kind of looks her whole body turns around. I feel like I sound crazy describing this thing at this in this kind of detail. Don't you feel a little bit like that?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, without a body, it. Yeah, I mean, you're really basing all this on circumstantial. This is just a couple, thousands of eyewitnesses, right, that are seeing.
Yeah.
Not the same animal purportedly, but the same type of animal, and so you're going to get variance in the face, variance in the neck, variance in the color. Like, the color is another big one. There's supposedly red Bigfoot, brown Bigfoot, black, even white. I believe the white Bigfoot, or more so in the Himalayas, in what they believe maybe is a cousin of Bigfoot, which is the Yeti. But they don't come in just one color. This isn't like a golden retriever where you just get golden ones, right? You get a lot of different colors. And you know, there's a lot of theories about why that is, Nate. It could be the region. It could be the breed. A lot of it might have to do with age. Maybe much like the silverback gorillas in Africa, maybe the older they get, their hair turns more silver or white. We see that in dogs. Shoot, we see that in people. I'm trying to hold that off right now.
keep that salt and pepper.
Right? Multiple colors have been reported. But nothing crazy. Nothing like unbelievable. You don't have any hot pink Bigfoots running around that we know of yet. But aside from the color, apparently they also emote. That's been reported, correct? Like they smile?
Well, it's a primate thing. They show their teeth when they're threatened. You know what I mean? They'll kind of smile at you. Several people have said that, where they look at you and they show their teeth. And it looks like a smile, but it's not. It's a warning sign. But it's kind of creepy. You know what I mean? You're out in the woods, you see something you shouldn't see, and looks at you, and then all of a sudden it just like shows its teeth and smiles at you. You're like, oh, gosh.
Yeah, like,
you know what I mean? Like, what a weird, quirky sight.
Right.
Almost evil, sinister. Like, I wouldn't want to see it. Like, it's just kind of like a creepy clown smiling at you. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Of all the things I've described, that would freak me out. Like, that would just be like, I'm coming to get you.
Yeah, I'm not.
I'm rip your arms off and throw you down this canyon.
No, thanks. I'll pass on a smile from a bipedal creature in the woods.
But that's often described as just like shows their teeth, and they don't have like tusks. You know what I mean? They don't have like those tusk teeth that stick out that like they say the mountain trolls have, where their teeth are coming out of their lips.
Yeah.
You know, you've seen that in like mythical creatures and sci-fi movies where they have these teeth come out of their mouth. It's not like that, but they do have big canine teeth. So there's some physical evidence that some people have Bigfoot teeth, like a mastodon shark tooth.
Yeah,
they find those mastodon shark teeth all over the beach sometimes after like a hurricane. They're like giant. They're like 25 times the size of a regular shark tooth.
Oh, you've seen those, right? Shark. Yeah, I've seen those. So there's people that claimed actually they believe they have a Bigfoot tooth.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Is that what you're telling me? There's like, are they making necklaces out of these? Where are these things, man?
I mean, some like cultures like in China where they grind up teeth and they think it's medicine and all kinds of wild stuff. So sounds like something you can't fake. So, I mean, that stuff, it's the hard part is that evidence is never really given much more than a shake. You know, like, oh, got a big tooth there.
Right. Now, what you would think, though, I mean, I watch enough true crime and listen to enough true crime stuff to... Like, shouldn't you be able to extract some DNA out of the root? I mean, depending on the age, there's usually DNA there. So it seems like if you thought you had something that was from a Bigfoot, you'd be able to pull some DNA and analyze it. And if it's something that isn't sequenced, that we haven't heard of or don't know about, be pretty compelling evidence that it's from something that we haven't scientifically documented, right?
You'd think that works. I don't know, for whatever reason, like finding DNA that's not cataloged doesn't like motivate a mass of scientists to like, oh, we found something new. It's just, I don't know, because I think maybe DNA is easy to be tainted.
Yeah, it's been compromised. Yeah, exactly. You can get samples that are tainted where whoever was handling it, their DNA somehow gets into it. You know, and then when you have a mixture, you essentially have a bad sample. I mean, it happens in crime a lot.
Yeah, it's not a foolproof system.
Yeah, exactly. That's how you lose evidence. You know, in murder cases or rape cases or whatever it may be, if the lab isn't completely diligent or the collection process isn't completely sterile and proper, you muddy the waters pretty well, and then you don't know what you have.
But on this head and these smiling teeth, flat nose, and next thing you know, they have these glowing eyes. And we talked about this a little bit on episode one. They have these bioluminescent eyes, and that are like green and red. I could tell you what, if I saw glowing red eyes looking at me, God, I don't know, man. I was just in the Smokies all last week, and I'm in like, you know, pretty well-populated campsite, and I'm like out at night, and I was like by the campfire by myself for 1 minute, and then my back's to like the forest, and I kind of looked behind me at one point. I'm like, okay, I'm going back in the camper. Like, they have glowing eyes, man. Hundreds of reports.
That's crazy.
I don't know. So they probably look weird in the daytime.
And they're usually going to look black. Yeah, that's going to look black and dark because they're really trying to absorb as much light as possible in the nocturnal environment, right? So in the daytime, yeah, they would probably appear like they have black eyes.
Yeah.
You know, when we begin to dive down those rabbit holes, Nate, you know, there's a large part of the community that believes in Bigfoot that believes Bigfoot to be a supernatural, you know, multidimensional being and not an actual flesh and blood animal. And that's just a little taste of what the wild world we're going to jump into eventually. But for this point, I think it's noteworthy to say, you know, to report that a whole lot of people say they see red eyes and glowing eyes. And we wouldn't include it if it wasn't a repeating theme in witness accounts.
Yeah. Yeah, over and over and over again. So that kind of wraps up the body, like the physical body of Bigfoot, the features that are described over and over and over again. None of that stuff is made up. Like I guarantee you I have not made up any of that stuff. That's just stuff I've heard over and over again, seen over and over again. There are several videos you can kind of make all this stuff out. Patterson Gimlin, for sure, all this stuff that, you know, leads credence to what we're saying here. But I think one thing I will say, though, Luke, is that, like, in different parts of the country, they are a little different. Like, the skunk ape is described more ape-like than the Sasquatch of the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
So there is some, like, territory, and there is some, like, little features will change. Like, the Yowie and the Yeren and the different Bigfoot around the world, some of them are shorter than others, or they have different head shapes than others, but for the most part, describing similar animals. But this is mostly Sasquatch that we're talking about, like Pacific Northwest.
Well, I mean that's not uncommon to have variants within species, though. I mean, deer is a great example. Deer on the West Coast look different from deer in the Appalachia, look different from deer here in the South. Like, yet they're all deer. I mean, it's not. It just happens to do with you have variants with any given species. It's how the animal kingdom works. It's how it was very interesting and I think also compelling for the evidence to have a consistency in traits, even though there's variants, there's consistency in specific traits for Bigfoot across the spectrum. While there may be different heights and, you know, maybe some smell more than others, you're still getting a lot of consistency in the attributes, the eyes, the strength, the speed, the behavior, the facial recognition. Maybe their head's not as conical, but maybe you get so there's too much cohesion and enough variance to make it really, I think, compelling as an unknown species.
When I'm describing this creature to you, Luke, I'm just like, gosh, what does Luke think about me even on this? I mean, you're doing this show with me. And I'm like, what the heck? I'm just like, what does he think right now? Does he think I'm just out to lunch? Like, I'm describing what most people think is a totally mythical, non-existent creature. And I'm literally talking about its features. Like, I hung out with it yesterday and we went and got lunch.
Right.
You know what I mean?
No, and I mean, I tend to be a little more on the skeptic side. Like anybody else listening to this, like there's a variance in sort of people's belief. And this is about a journey for me and understanding and wanting to dive. And there's so many different elements to this story. I mean, everybody loves a great story. I think that's what, I mean, really the thread of humanity is that we all want to have and live out our own story and be caught up in a story. And we all love great storytelling and great stories, right? And this is a great story. Now, I think we're all in a different place in the journey on how much of this we believe to be legend and how much we believe to be to real. But I want to dive into this because I really want to examine the evidence. I want to understand the historical context. I want to understand what's out there. And I want to hear from experts. And I mean, you have been doing this for 10 years.
Yeah.
This is something that you've really dove into. And it's not like that for me. Like, I'm more of a passive Bigfoot guy. I've read plenty of books, watched the shows. You know, we both come from Northern California, where is somewhat the bottom part of what we believe is really some prime Sasquatch Bigfoot area there between Northern California and Alaska. In some ways, it does sound like a little crazy, but also in some ways, you can't discount, you know, the testimony, especially when there's so much consistency across thousands of different eyewitnesses. You have to give us some kind of credence. And while, like I said before, it's circumstantial evidence, it really seems to be a smoking gun. And so we've got to lay this all out. This is part of us laying out that case and building that foundation, as I've said it before, so that we can start doing deep dives into some of the crazy theories, some of the fringe theories, and some of the explanations that experts, historians, and across the gamut of all kinds of science, what these people have come to conclusion for what this crypto animal is, might be, or most likely is. And in order to get there, we gotta talk about these descriptions, man.
Yeah.
We got to talk about what people have seen, what people have smelled, what people have heard. Yeah. I mean, that's why we start with the Sierra sounds in the beginning, right? There's these unexplainable sounds that record in the 70s in the middle of nowhere, Sierra Nevada mountains, that we run in our intro, that there really isn't a good explanation for. There's not a good explanation for it. It doesn't sound like anything else that's out there. It doesn't even sound like something that's within the vocal capabilities of humans.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to ask yourself, like, if there's a bunch of hunters that are outdoorsmen that know everything about everything that's in the woods, and they go to this hunt camp every year and they start having these weird experiences and they record it, you got to think there's credence to all these men coming back and saying that,
yeah,
dude, there's something out there. You can't discount that. And I think that sometimes in faith, and this is something, the threshold of belief for a lot of people is different. Some people maybe need to have their own experience before they really believe, and that does happen for a lot of people. But I think I'm more on the more along the lines of, if we can lay out, you know, a coherent and linear case with circumstantial evidence that undeniably points toward a very logical conclusion with this, then I'm game for that, and that's what I'm ready to walk and run through this with you, Phil. I know we have a couple more attributes, but I want that little diatribe there is like, I think there's going to be a lot of people that are in that boat with me, and that's great, man. That's why we're doing this. It's something that's worth talking about. It's something that's worth exploring. And I think there's a unique space for what we're doing here, being guys that are somewhere in the middle. Yeah. We're not leading up the BFRO. We're not anthropologists.
Not yet.
But the last 40 years, not yet, man. I haven't. I'm not wearing my tinfoil hat yet.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I just think a lot of people don't realize the amount of evidence that, like, we basically if you're an artist, you can go paint a picture now of what we described, right? And I don't think a lot of people know, like, dang, there's this much evidence out there to describe this thing, and consistently over and over and over again. I think a lot of people just think, it's crazy, man. And it's funny because my buddy was texting me yesterday, and we could probably end here because we've given you guys some huge nuggets of info on what this thing looks and smells and acts like and how it walks and everything. But I texted my buddy because years ago, I was, when I first got into this, just asking some friends and was talking about it, just curious what people's just, if their open-mindedness would happen. He's like, oh, dude, actually, and we toured with his band. And he's like, oh, we hired a drummer once and he came on tour with us. And I was texting him a photo because he stopped at some show or some stop and saw a Bigfoot thing. He texted me like a picture of like a Bigfoot coffee mug or something, or I don't know what it was. And he saw him. He said, what are you doing? He's like, oh, my buddy believes in Bigfoot. So I always razz him. I always send him photos of Bigfoot stuff because I think he's an idiot, right? And he goes, and he goes, oh, well, my wife's seen one. And everyone in the van stops. Like, what? It's like, and this is like a hired drummer, so it's not like this. It's not like a guy they know very well. It's just like, wait, what? And then he just begins to tell them this story of his wife, or I think they got a divorce. She saw one in Kentucky. And then my buddy called me. He's like, you're never going to guess what happened, dude. My drummer's wife's like had an encounter. And I'm just starting laughing because I'm like, dude, see? But he gives me all this crap. And he still thinks it's all made up. I'm like, what does she have to gain to tell this story to her husband? You know what I like?
There's not really a lot to gain, right? If you think about it objectively, you're like, well, especially if it's an ex-wife, you're like, well, you definitely are crazy, right? Yeah. You just proved it again. No, so there's not a lot to gain there. And I think that's not an uncommon story. I mean, all these people, I mean, the most people I think that see this and have an experience, the vast majority aren't looking for it, you know? It's not like we're having groupthink here. And all these people are going out in the woods looking for something, and they're going to see it because they're looking for it, right? It's not the case. And I think that's also a compelling argument for this being a valid thing, animal, whatever you want to call it, is that you have a bunch of people that aren't out there, you know, looking for it. I think sometimes when you really, really believe in something, you're going to, people think you will manifest that and because you want to see it, right? But most of the people I think that are out there.
Oh, the natives say the opposite.
Really?
The natives say if you see it, it's a bad omen. You shouldn't see it. So you don't. They would say you don't want to see it. But hey, maybe we can get into that at a different time.
Yeah, we'll get into that for sure.